Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
What smells good in here?
Is it
nothing?
Me?
Nothing smells good in here.
Okay.
Okay.
These drinks are good. It's big drinks we got here.
Oh, yeah.
We can hit the spot, man.
That's right. What's happening?
Oh, well, let's see. We came off of a triumphant Mermaid Lounge reunion.
When was this?
That was Sunday. Sunday, over at the Broadside. We had the outdoor stage, the big indoor room, and the lounge going. Three different stages continuously. Must have had like 20 different bands. A lot of bands from the old days playing, sounding terrific. You know, a lot of people we know. You would have a lot of familiar faces, people who were also at the Circle Bar after the Mermaid had closed, but they were all back there. $1,000 car, those guys. Phil DeGree was over there. Jonathan Freilich and his Naked on the Floor band played. The Geraniums played. I played with the Geraniums with Jeff Treffinger.
Cool.
Doug Garrison and Alex McMurray helped us out. It wound up being as much a seance as it was a gig. Conjuring the spirits of our fallen comrades and the Geraniums.
Did you sing Connie's Girl?
No, we didn't do that one. We had a full set of great material to play. It was tears shed in the room
over a bar.
Well, over the whole emotional situation that we had created there. But it was a great day.
Now, why did that bar fail? What happened?
Well, it was no longer. Yeah, it ran for a good long time, and then you know they when they opened it there on John Churchill Chase, all of those warehouses across the street and surrounding it had been empty since, you know, like for 40 years or something, 50 years, and it was really the success of the Mermaid being there and having people show up there and go to that neighborhood, I think kind of drove the revitalization of it, and people bought those warehouses and redeveloped them as condos, and people started moving in.
The rich white people came in and they said, get out.
Yeah. So as they start complaining about the noise from the Mermaid.
Get out. We don't like your riffraff.
The owners raised the rent. The lease was going to be an issue. So they'd done it for 10 years, and they decided, well, let's move on here. And then they thought they were going to tear it down, redevelop it into something. What they wound up doing is just changing ownerships, became the Rusty Nail. The room is almost identical to what it was.
Oh.
And the patio, they developed it a little bit.
Yeah, but it's a lot cleaner.
Well, I'd say I don't think it is cleaner. It's just a lot less cool, you know? I mean, we had a real scene there. And the Mermaid illustrates how, you know, like a location can really be the catalyst for a whole scene that grows up out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
So they reminisce about good old times.
We got to see each other and visit and hear this music again. And
now, did you see any old fucks of yours?
Well, my wife was there. Beyond that, no.
Because I remember the Mermaid Lodge. I was only there a little bit, but there was a lot of fucking going on.
Well, yeah, it was a time. You know, we were all young.
I was hanging out with Carlo Nuccio,
mm-hmm.
and he was doing like a solo show there.
Huh, okay.
Just try to pick up a few bucks. In the middle of his act, you called him.
Okay.
And he said, yeah, I'm playing. He goes, I'm playing a gig. Yeah, it's ordered. So he was scoring for you, I think.
Oh, that sounds likely enough.
Yeah.
not a far-fetched scenario.
But
Carlo was not there.
But
his widow Carmen was there. She was a very sweet girl, and you know, she was soaking.
I thought she was going to move away.
I don't know. I hadn't heard that, but she was.
Maybe
there.
I can get that $80 from her.
Well, maybe you could.
$80 Carlo died over me.
Bring an action against the estate. Yeah. Some yeah. small claims court or something.
Yeah.
Drag the widow in.
Drag the widow in. She's probably got 80 bucks.
I think she does. She seems like a frugal, you know, responsible
young
lady. Now,
did Carlo die broke?
No, I don't think so. No, no. Carlo is, you know, Carlo's family is, they have a whole bunch of property in the French Quarter, you know.
But he borrowed so much off those properties.
I don't know about that. I don't know what the interior of the finances.
Oh, okay,
but,
whatever. But he's dead. That's why we can talk shit about him, because he's dead.
We miss Carlo. We wish he was his.
If he were alive, we wouldn't be able to do that.
That's the rules.
Well, you were doing it when he was alive.
You know. Well, some people. I'm Manny Chevrolet. Just like he used to say to me, I'm Carlo. I'm Manny.
Sure. You sure, know? Yeah. Same axioms apply.
You know?
Right. Well, in other news, you know, we have this election coming up. I don't know. We need to get too hung up in that. I will just say, you know, for people that want to be cute and vote for a third party for, you know, their conscience or something, I want to remind you that people voting for third parties in several elections are the reason that we have a right-wing supermajority in the Supreme Court now.
That's a lot kinder than I would have been.
So if you don't like right-wing supermajority and you voted for Ralph Nader or who else?
Jill Stein. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
She's a real piece of work.
If you want to blame someone, look in the mirror, people. That's as far as I'll go. Moving on. Let's see, the school zones. This is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while, man.
Oh, God.
It's you know, this is in the department of the city government of New Orleans, or I should say a criminal organization masquerading as a city.
So what, they busted you again?
No, they didn't, but you know, there's some state law that went through trying to regulate the school zone times, and I think they were trying to limit the length of that time, but what it did was it allowed each school to set their own school zone time.
Oh.
So there's a stretch of Canal Street where you can drive down, and within 1 mile, there are four different school zones, all with different starting and ending times for the morning and the afternoon. So as you're driving, you have to, like, look at find that real small print on the sign, see when it is, and it's some crazy times, and they're all different, so it's...
So this upsets you.
Well, it's just something you have to be aware of, because you hate to be getting robbed by the city.
Now, is there anywhere where we can see, like, is there a website to see which school has what time for their zone?
That's a good question, Manny. Maybe so listeners may know the answer to that. They could comment and tell us where the link would be.
Well, I never drive during the school zone hours.
Right, right. You're already at work.
I'm already at work. It's already over by the time I get off work.
Right.
So, but you drivers out there, be careful with the children.
Children
are the future.
Well, yeah, you don't want to hit a kid. That's the that's definitely something you don't want to do. But in fact, I'll say this now. Thought of this the other day. It's something I want to pass on to my children. If you're in a neighborhood where there's a lot of cars parked on either side of the street, to where, like, you can't really see what's beyond the cars, and it's like after school or a Saturday or a Sunday, even if you can go fast down that street, go slow, because you don't know what little kid is going to run out from behind one of those cars, and it may be too late for you to slow down. So better off taking it slow to begin with.
So, you know, talking about that kind of stuff, you know, I have I'm from California, and I keep up with news out there because I got family out there. Apparently a few months back, the whole state of California passed this law that law enforcement can no longer say, "Do you know why I pulled you over?"
Hmm.
Do you know that?
No,
it's
I didn't
law
hear
they
that.
Passed. And so it's weird. But so what happens is they can't say that, but the person they pull over gets five guesses. They get five guesses. And if they get it right, then they get ticketed or arrested or whatever like that. But if they don't get it wrong, then the cop says, this is why, you know? So they're crazy going nuts
So
out
is there a benefit from guessing correctly?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Just kind
I mean,
of
you got pulled over for something.
Satisfaction of a job
know?
Well
they
done.
They just can't say, "Do you know why?" Because it's so fucking sarcastic.
It is, yeah.
It's like, "Do you know why I pulled you over? You see that
no
over
officer.
There? You know?
I don't.
You know what? You know when they say, you know, do you know how fast you were going? The speed limit's 60. Oh, I was going way faster mm-hmm. than that. I remember back in L.A. and back in the 80s, I had to go to traffic court. You know, they have traffic court. Mm-hmm. And they called, you know, the traffic judge is calling everyone up there and say, okay, you're in for And this one guy called, got called up. He goes, you were doing 110 in a 20-mile-an-hour zone. And the whole place just started laughing hysterically. You know? He goes, so what they did back then was, I don't know if it's changed now, but what they did, they would fine you like $10 per mile that you were over the speed limit. This guy was going like, you know, he got here. So it was like, you know, $600 or more than that. I don't know what it was. But it was the funniest thing. I mean, even the judge like was laughing and stuff. And the poor guy just sat there, you know, thinking, Jesus,
yep.
you know, whatever. But yeah, that's kind of crazy, these laws they pass, you know. So, but that's one law, you know. So, you know, you drivers out in California, you know, watch out. It's going to happen to you.
You may get, get some guesses. Get your guesses ready.
Yeah. You know, you look at the mirror, you know, if your eyes are glazed, you know, you can guess that, or you can guess, you know, well, I had 18 drinks before I got in the car.
I'm so drunk. Is that why?
Is that
no,
why?
No, that's
really
not. Okay. All right,
or
moving on.
You just like me, officer? Right. Am I? You're attracted to me?
Like the cut of my jib?
Yeah. You want my car? Anyway, yeah, so that happened. That I thought that was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. What else is going on?
Well, you know, this Diddy is still in the news.
Oh,
P. Diddy.
Yeah. it's going to be, his new name is Diddy P.
Yeah.
Diddy P in his pants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the onion continues to get peeled, and it's so they had like six more suits filed yesterday. As a attorney in I think Texas has got some mass tort going on,
right?
To representing two women and four men.
Oh.
So it's very, very freaky over there.
The freak offs,
the freak offs. And the attorney, as he was filing this suit, he was talking to the press. He said there will be more suits filed against other individuals, and some of these individuals will raise your eyebrows.
Mm.
You know, people you're familiar. You will be surprised at some of the people named in the suit.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
Rome is on fire, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. So also, what happened over the weekend? I saw that this Colorado man. He got hired to work for this tree company, and he lost both his legs in the chipper.
Oh, geez.
What happened was he was throwing branches in the chipper,
mm-hmm.
and one of the branches had like a little curve on it,
mm-hmm.
and it caught his ankle monitor because he had an ankle monitor. It caught his ankle monitor and threw him into the chipper, man.
Jesus, man.
And he's screaming for dear life, you know. Everyone wears those headphones or earplugs, so they can't hear his screams.
Oh, jeez.
So finally, you know, they get him out of there, and he lost both legs from the knee down.
Oh, wow. I could see that.
But he seemed very positive about
it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because they were interviewing him, and he said, I'm going to devote my life to helping people with sobriety. So there you go.
All right, didn't see that one coming.
And then, you know, he was helping with sobriety, and he had a big smile on his face. And then he said the funniest thing. I thought he says, walking's overrated. That's what he said.
Okay. I'm
which
glad
I kind of agree.
He has a positive attitude.
Yeah, I don't like to walk.
Sure.
You know?
I grew up in a
city that no one walks.
Right, right.
You know, my wife is always saying, let's go for a walk. Why? What's out there?
We're just going to have to walk back.
We're just going to have to walk back. You know, she gets mad because I drive the car to the corner liquor store. You know?
Right.
I don't want to walk, especially down here in the heat.
Because then once you get the liquor, then you got to carry it back.
Yeah, whatever. Right? The ice, the groceries, you know. Usually I have to carry her back.
Okay.
You know, so it's crazy going nuts. But yeah, he said walking's overrated, and I kind of agree with him. And he's got a positive attitude for a guy who's got no
absolutely.
Legs.
Well, you know, I one time, one of the only straight jobs I've ever had for some short period of time was I was the ground man on an Asplund tree cutting crew. And Alex Chilton was the cutter. He was in the cherry picker, up in the hydraulic boom. But it was like a diesel engine chipper. That thing had like a 300-pound, three-blade, grinder in it. And so I would have to. It was my job to pull everything out, put it in stacks, and then run it through the chipper. And I would tell you. Like in Jaws, where the captain tells them when you're handling the ropes with the floats, don't ever hold them, because when the shark takes it, you won't be able to let go fast enough.
Right.
That's how fast the chipper is. So when you are feeding something in, you can't have a closed hand. It has to be just on your palm, because when the chipper finally grabs it, it will suck it in. And so fast, you won't be able to let go.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That job was so dangerous. There was about five different ways you could die. There was every aspect of that job was deadly.
Well, I don't care for trees, to be honest with you.
I
bet you got a lot of toothpicks in that job, huh?
Well, you could have. You had the opportunity. You know, I actually have tree cutting in my notes tonight, and I've had because I just had a bunch of tree work done.
Oh.
And, you know, tree work is very expensive. And after this, maybe we should get to our guest, unless you have anything else. But
please.
It's very expensive. For obvious reasons, because it's so deadly. So I found this guy. It was recommended to me, and he comes over. He uses no spikes on his boots or anything. No safety ropes for himself. He free climbs like Tarzan with a gas chainsaw in his hand. He uses a ladder just to get to the first limb, and then climbs it like Tarzan. Cuts a giant trees, like 60-foot pine tree I had in one of the trees I had cut, just has one helper with a rope guiding stuff that he's cutting down in between power lines or off of, avoiding people's fences or roofs or something. Man, oh man, I've never seen somebody do something like that. It turns out, I was like, well, how'd you do this? They said, well, I grew up in North Carolina. You know, we have a lot of paper mills, and, I was harvesting pine trees since I'm a kid. And I guess he just got comfortable. He's done it so many times. He did it in the rain with no. A few weeks ago, we had 4 days of rain. Two of the days, he was cutting cutting trees in the rain with no ropes. Anyway. That guy's,
I hope he has insurance.
Guys, he did have insurance. Yeah, I asked him for the insurance, and that's a good thing when people they send you a copy of their insurance, you can call up and say, "Is this policy in effect?" No, I did that because you can get somebody write you a policy, and you have the thing, and you cancel it the next day, and you just show that to all your customers, but you're not actually insured. So a little bit of due diligence I employ. Well, one other thing, we missed a couple of deaths of some greats in the past few weeks. First one being Kris Kristofferson.
Yes.
What a monster songwriter, recording artist, actor.
Incredibly nice person.
Yeah, you had some experience with Kris Kristofferson.
Yeah, really, really sweet art. Great guy.
Yeah, I could see that. Rhodes Scholar also.
Yeah. Yeah.
Athlete, too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
striking fella.
Yeah, yeah, man, no kidding.
I didn't think he was that great of an actor, but...
well, everybody can't be the best at everything, but, man, he sure was a hell of a songwriter.
Bo Jackson was the best at everything.
He was not a great songwriter.
I beg to differ.
But...
I beg to differ. I've got his record.
Really?
Made in the 80s, yeah.
Okay, all right, all right.
It says, Bo Knows Music.
Okay. Mm.
You know?
All right.
But anyway, he passed away. So,
Chris, and then also Pete Rose, shortly in that same time frame. We just had Keith O'Brien on, who wrote the definitive.
I thought we talked about that
biography.
Already, didn't we?
No, we haven't.
Really?
No. But we had Keith on again, who wrote the definitive biography on Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle. It's just. Came out last year, earlier this year, and he was a guest on maybe five or six shows ago. Everybody should check that out.
I will.
Great episode.
He died owing lots of people money too.
Did he?
Just like Carlo.
I know he was. He was still a degenerate gambler right up till the end.
Yeah.
Put him in the hall.
Yeah. Put him in the hall.
Put him in the hall.
A lot of his stuff's already in the hall.
That's true.
It's just his name. I mean, his records are in the hall.
Yeah.
The bat he used to break. All that stuff is in the hall.
Yep.
You know, it's just that.
It's the principle of it.
Yeah. You know, his
statue
or whatever they call it. Yeah. Mm. It's not in there with all the other ones, you know.
Yeah.
All the other cheaters in baseball, too. You know. But yeah, he died, and I don't know if he'll be missed, you know. Chris Christopherson, man, that guy was really ill, though, because I saw something on him about a year ago, and he could barely hold a sentence, man. You know?
They didn't know what was wrong with him for a long time, and then they discovered it was Lyme disease.
Really?
And then when they treated that, suddenly he could remember all his lyrics and play shows again.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then I think old age got him at the end. But
that's terrible affliction, man. It's often goes undiagnosed.
Incredibly kind man. Nice. Really cool.
A prince. Well, Manny.
You borrowed money from him?
My friend Donnie Fritz did. I'll tell you that.
All right, well, you have to get into that.
But not I.
Well, can we get to our guest, man?
Sure.
Seems like about that time.
Hello.
Excellent. So our guest, he's a Grammy-winning drummer.
Oh, God.
Record label co-owner. He's a co-owner of Single Lock Records. Has artists like John Cleary, Blind Boys of Alabama, Cedric Burnside, My Band, Loose Cattle. He's also, it's a label out of Muscle Shoals, Alabama. He's played with Cedric Burnside, The Pollies, Bel Adair, John Paul White, Speckled Bird, all kind of bands. He's also an artist manager with his own Thousand Dances artist management company. He's recently started Well Kept Secrets, a music company that resists the music business.
Tries to.
It's
not that easy.
No. And as I say, on November 1st, he's releasing Loose Cattle's new album, Someone's Monster.
It's brilliant.
On Singa. So thank you.
Very proud.
Single Lock Records. So we're going to get into all that and more, but without further ado, the great Mr. Reed Watson.
Thank you.
Welcome, Reed.
It's the music business. It's basically just like the mob, right?
It kind of is.
Yeah, it's
I wish it wasn't, but it is.
It's like, they're like loan sharks.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, somebody was, I can't remember who this quote came from, but they were saying how they were getting involved in the porn business and what a sleazy business it was, you know, and the guy was saying, that's okay, I grew up in the music business, this is nothing.
My favorite is someone talking about soccer. It's like somebody kicks the ball and everybody just follows the ball around, and that's all the music business is. Like somebody has an idea and everybody chases it. And then someone kicks it somewhere else, and then they just chase it around like a bunch of lemmings. That's all they do.
Okay,
I
can see that.
It's it could be a lot better, I think. But you know.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Get
sure.
some background on you, Reed.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us where you're born. Where'd you grow up?
So I'm from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, originally. Went to school at Alabama, so.
So you grew up like all through elementary school in Tuscaloosa?
Totally, yeah. I was there all the way through college.
So what kind of family? Mom and dad?
Mom and dad. Who
brothers,
were always
sisters?
A little sister.
Okay.
Everybody was really supportive of what I wanted to do. I was kind of always obsessed with doing this work and into it.
What is that, playing music?
Playing music, working in music, listening to music. Like
you started playing at a young age?
Yeah.
You're a drummer,
I
said?
Yeah, I was doing that as long as I can remember. My first job was in a record store. I mean,
like school band in elementary school, that kind of
thing?
Well, paradiddles,
Rattamacues. I was not of the caliber to be in my high school band. I went to a, how do I say this in a diplomatic way? I went to a 95% African-American high school.
Okay.
And the marching band experience was not for me.
They had a...
They
had a kick-ass drum line.
That's exactly right.
You would have had to been beaten on...
say that with all respect. It was not for me. But I was in all kind of garage bands and stuff. And,
okay. So,
you know.
So,
I mean,
like... So you were already playing drums though at the okay
and yeah totally
a drum kit and what kind of bands were you listening to?
It's
like
one
punk
of the
rock
and, yes okay. and indie rock and like one of my one of the best things about Tuscaloosa at that time was that I lived, I don't know, like 7 blocks from a record store.
Right.
So I would walk up the street, you know, and get to know the guys working in there, and they would just tell me stuff to buy.
Sure.
You should listen to this.
Right.
And then when I turned 18, you know, suddenly I was working in there too.
Right.
I mean, now, it was just like right in.
Now,
so
kids today don't understand how before the internet, we were all alone. We're all alone with, you know, yeah. Popeye and pals and
so much
know,
better.
Television. And to find your tribe or, you know, people that were on a similar wavelength as you, one of the places you could do that would be a record
That's
store.
That's right. And I still think one of the places you can do that, it's a record store. We need to protect them.
Right. I mean, there used to be more record stores. There'd be one at every mall,
totally.
You know, you go hang out. They had a head shop across the way.
You know, it's sad
way.
Because Tuscaloosa doesn't have one anymore.
Wow.
You know, like many places. I mean,
that's a college town.
Crazy. I mean, and from Tuscaloosa, I moved to Florence, Alabama in the Shoals and worked at a record shop there. They don't have a record shop anymore. I mean, like it's...
Now,
those places are drying up. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, I know. Well, Tuscaloosa.
Yep.
Were you aware of Fred Lane, Reverend
totally.
Fred Lane,
yes.
and the whole
yeah? So
whole,
anything
pataphysical review.
Dude, anything
so
weird?
Just for our listeners, we actually had Reverend Fred Lane on during the pandemic.
Excellent,
did a great show. You heard that?
Oh
one?
Yeah.
Oh, right on. Yes, we love.
I'm a frequent listener to the Trouble Man.
Another Reed.
Yes.
Reverend
Indeed.
Is his actual
Indeed.
Real name. But, you know, I this is a theme I come back to over and over again is like Southern freaks.
Yes.
Many of us grow up and you go to San Francisco or New York, but then there's a certain subset of people who just
leave.
Dig in.
That's right.
And I feel like we're doing work almost behind enemy lines.
Absolutely. I feel 100% of that. And, I mean, I think that's why I stuck around Tuscaloosa as long as I did. That's what drew me to the Shoals area, was the history of that.
Right.
Like, my whole childhood, my whole teenage life, everything was just finding the other freaks.
Yeah.
Who are the weirdos around here? Like, who can I identify with?
Eugene Chadbourne.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, like, who wants to play music? Who wants to do anything subversive and weird? Anyone? Please? I mean, the idea that you could go to school for music was just so foreign to me at that time. You know, I mean, I wish somebody would have told me that, but it was just like, what? Okay, let's... So it was like, by any means necessary, we would play.
Right.
You know, figure out a place to play. All of it. It was really, really important. And, you know, that spirit, sort of the idea behind that has kind of propelled me ever since. It's...
Yeah.
I've always felt like we're kind of underdogs in this business.
Right.
Bit.
So you're playing music in bands there,
yeah.
find some guys through the record store.
Yeah.
And you're also working at the record store.
Yeah, there were a few weirdos there.
Uh-huh.
There were some of us.
I'll bet.
You know, house parties, and every once in a while we'd convince one of the bars in town to let us play, and, you know, they wouldn't make any money, and... You know, we just did that whole thing, and it was
sure.
cool. But, you know, by a certain point, it was like, wow, the ceiling here is really low. I got to get out of here.
Okay, so
and
then you went to from there to the Muscle Shoals area?
I went to the Shoals because it was like, okay, where do the weirdos that are into music migrate in this state? Where do they exist? And I was like, well, I guess they're there. And everybody laughed at me. I was just like, what? You're moving up there? Why? I was like, look, I mean, we just had a tornado in Tuscaloosa. It was horrible. Like, everything is really fucked up. I need a break. Like, I'm just going to take a year, move up to this small little town. I'll work at the record shop up there and just sort of get my head straight and figure it out.
Now, when was this?
It was 2011.
Okay. You're quite a bit younger than me, man.
Yeah, I'm 39.
Okay. Oh, wow.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
We could be your father.
Well, you know.
you know,
for better or for worse, I guess.
Chris Christopherson was your father.
I mean, he could have been.
You can only hope.
Certainly been. Yeah, no shit. I wouldn't mind that. But anyway, ended up up there and People were just like,
were
what
you
are
already
you
playing in a band that moved there? Did you know guys that
no,
were there
I
already?
Knew some. Well, you know, in Alabama, like everybody that plays music knows each other.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot like Louisiana or yeah. anywhere else. I mean, like if you're in the music scene, you kind of know everybody here.
Right. And it's not that big.
So I had some friends up there, but it was a risk because it wasn't cool.
Now,
like
look,
it is now.
Before I went there this last time, mm-hmm. or this time that I went and played,
yeah, yeah.
you were not actually in town.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It turned out. But I had never been to Muscle Shoals before.
Yeah. It's a really magical, cool little place, man. And it, you know, I thought I'd be there for a year, and I was there for 12.
Well, it's like Brigadoon, you know. It's off the beaten track.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta
you
mean
don't,
to
you
go
don't,
there.
Yeah, you do not randomly show up there.
So
it's not off the interstate.
Right,
it is out in the middle of nowhere. But
it's like, yeah. it's like what, 2 or 3 hours from a whole bunch of places?
That's right. It's 2 hours from Birmingham, 2 hours from Memphis, 2 hours from Nashville.
Okay.
And that's kind of its spot. So if you're a touring musician, it's not a bad place to base out of.
Right.
There's just not a lot of people.
Yeah, I liked it when I was there. I thought,
it's
this
cool.
would be a good place to disappear. If
no,
you
it
had,
totally
like, a,
is.
Had
and
some kind of outside income, you know.
And if you want to disappear and make a great record,
yeah.
my God. I mean, the recording studios there are fabulous. It's a really great spot for that. So,
right. Well, I was asking, when I was there, I was asking, like, you know, you have the two, you know, legendary studios
sure.
there. But then people were telling me they have like 5 or 6.
Oh, yeah.
ongoing studios
oh, yeah.
that people are doing work in all
mm-hmm.
the time. People are coming from all those places, Nashville, Memphis.
Yep.
Well, famously, the Stones were in Memphis or were coming through on tour and wanted to do a recording. They were going to do it in Memphis. And they're like, man, if you come to Memphis, you're going to be swamped.
Right.
You're not going to be able to. So that's how they wound up doing it.
So come to Sheffield, Alabama.
Yeah.
Nobody will know you there.
Nobody
right.
did.
And they didn't.
And there's, you know, Jim Dickinson winds up going there
yep.
and playing on Wild Horses. It winds up being an amazing session.
Yeah.
They have video of it or film of it.
And so, Gimme Shelter, yeah. Oh, man. I mean, it really is. It is a place in Southern folklore or Southern music history or wherever that kind of retains the magic. You know, it's like Memphis, you sort of, I love Memphis, but you have to search for those spots, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nashville, don't get me started. I think a lot of the magic there has been sucked away.
Vegas.
Yeah. But the Shoals, man, I mean, it's crazy. You pull up to these studios and these places, and it's just like, oh, my God, this is real?
It's like time is
still. Are you fucking
still.
Kidding me?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, and I've had the pleasure to record in those rooms, and it really is. There's something about, I believe in that.
Uh-huh,
you know
sure.
what I mean? Like, spaces and places and the magic of them and what they mean and what they do to people. Like, I think that's real. And I mean, you know, it's the kind of place that gets under your skin a little bit. And if you're in there making a record, you can capture something really special because your distraction's low. You know, there's not a lot of other things going on. It's affordable.
Right.
Your caliber of studio musician in town is sky high.
Yeah.
It's crazy how good they are. And people are really friendly and kind, and that's a huge deal too.
Right.
You know, I loved it up there. I loved it.
Well, so you move there, you start meeting guys, you start getting into bands. What are the kind of the first
bands?
Well,
I mean, you know, it's small town.
Okay.
So word gets around quick that some dummy from Tuscaloosa moved up here, you know, and of course, if you're working at the record shop, well, you're at ground zero.
Okay.
Right? And so within a month, I had met pretty much everybody in town. I still think there are people in the Shoals that don't realize I've moved.
That you've moved to New Orleans?
Yeah. So when I'm up there, they're like, hey, man, how's it going? Good. You know, like, it's just a very sleepy, slow kind of place.
Uh-huh.
So it didn't take long to meet people. And I'm the kind of person, I'm a dreamer. I like to build things. I like to try things. And I like to talk about them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I'm not going to hide that. So it did not take long for people to realize, like, oh, he wants to do stuff. Well, if we do, we should work with him. Or we should, you know, tell him about it. And we should make friends. Because you got to understand, in a sleepy place like that, most people just want to, like,
sit on the couch and
yeah,
eat
go home
TV
and watch
dinner.
TV.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like at ambition or whatever is very rare.
Well, you know, what you just described, like there was that book, The Secret, that came out, I don't know, 20 years ago that everybody's super into, you
right,
know,
and
it's
right.
like there was something magical about it.
Speaking your intentions
it.
Or whatever.
Well, what you just described, that's the real part of that. That's how that really works.
That's true. I think so. You know, it's like you're not going to find your people unless you speak it.
And when you do, people will come out, especially when you have pure intentions and energy behind it.
That's right.
People will materialize almost by magic.
That's
to
right.
go, well, you know, I actually have this room I'm not using at all that
absolutely.
If you want to start rehearsing there, you could do that. And you're like, oh, wow, okay.
And well, it was a really interesting time because, you know, at that time, Jason Isbell was starting to kind of pop into the mainstream consciousness. The Alabama Shakes were, I mean, their first, the show that's on YouTube that everybody says, oh man, that's like their first public appearance. That was at the record shop I worked at.
Yeah.
I was behind the register while they were filming that. You know, I mean, those things, there was a lot of sort of happenstance like that, that right. just sort of happened. And we happened to be in the right place to sort of capitalize on this newfound attention to the area. And then of course the movie, the Netflix movie came out and that was huge. And you know, all of a sudden, hey, it might be a great time to start a record label here and like, try to get people to care about this whole thing again. And
now that was from, cause you had a band that was wanting to put out records and, didn't see any
you know, at
appropriate
the time,
labels.
At or? The time I didn't have a band.
Okay.
At the time I was just sort of, to be honest with you, I was kind of searching. Mm-hmm. I was in one of those spaces like, what the fuck am I going to do? and you know, slowly but surely I got involved in a number of bands up there, but when Single Lock, the label started, that was more just a response to the fact that there was this great scene there. And it was started as a very simple intention. It was just like, I mean, you know, if we can sell 100 copies of something, that might pay for the recording of it, and it'll just be a fun hobby or whatever, and it's all good. And then the third thing we put out was the first St. Paul and the Broken Bones record.
Okay.
You know, whether that's your thing or not, it's up to you.
That sold a lot of copies.
It sold 200,000 copies.
All right.
and we had to, I mean, you know, it was like really quickly, like everybody up there kind of had to like wake up and, okay, are we going to be serious about this or not?
Go, oh, this is possible.
There's an opportunity here.
Uh-huh.
And that pretty much sustained the label for 10 years. I mean, it was off to the races at that point.
Right.
And so from that moment forward, we were all in boot camp. Like, you know,
catch up on your
how to be a label overnight.
Uh-huh.
And
which is not easy.
Oh, we got kicked in the teeth hard. But it was thrilling because it was like, not only have I found my people, you know, they're here.
Right.
We have an opportunity to actually make a career. We can do this. You know, this is a beautiful thing. People are paying attention. And so through that, it was a really, really wonderful opportunity to kind of spotlight all of these other bands that were happening in North Alabama at the time. Mm-hmm. It was an extremely fertile moment for that scene. You know, these days it's kind of in a downward slope. You know, everything ebbs and flows, right?
Sure, sure, sure.
It was flowing at that point.
Right.
It's ebbing a little bit now.
Okay.
But you know what? Yes. That's how scenes go.
The wheel of fortune turns.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's like 2 or 3 years that are there that are kind of a blur.
I'll bet.
You know,
people don't understand. Like, at some point after the Iguanas had been through Margaritaville Records, MCA,
yeah.
and now we were off that. You know, in a position to we put out an independent record, made so much money selling
yeah.
it ourselves here, selling it in Chicago. You know, and I remember thinking, oh, maybe we should start our own label and,
yeah.
and do this. And I called up Carlo Ditta, who had Orleans Records. Mm-hmm. I'd recorded the Willie DeVille New mm-hmm. Orleans record with him, and I was like, he's a good friend of mine. And I was like, Carlo, I'm thinking about doing this. He goes, oh, Renee, you don't want to do that, man. He goes, look, he goes, you spend all your time on the phone chasing motherfuckers to pay you. You know, if you don't have enough releases, you don't have anything to hold over their heads to get them to pay you for the last one.
That's right.
And so there's like all this, like, still gangster kind of shit.
Yeah.
From the 50s that you would think that still goes on.
I mean, some of it still goes on.
Well, I mean, just in terms of trying to strong arm someone in, having some leverage to get them to pay you.
Oh man, I clawed for every
every nickel.
Oh my god! And then like trying to get like, let's get a label in Europe. We need to get a partnership in Europe. We need to get a partnership in Japan. We need to get somebody in Australia. And it was like, I don't speak Japanese. You know what I mean? It's like, what the fuck are we gonna do? And we clawed for every single little bit of it, and that experience still sort of sustains me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, that's how I built my Rolodex, that's how I built the business, and it's hard. Yeah, if you're a band, you do not want to start your own label.
Right.
You do not want to do that. Trust me, you don't. You got to be a special kind of idiot to want to do that.
Right. Well, but
leave it to morons like me to want to do that.
You don't want that. So
yeah,
that's
exactly right.
Well, you know, each one of these small hills that you conquer gives you confidence that, well,
sure,
I didn't think I could do this, but I did.
Of course.
We can move on to the next
And then you
challenge.
Learn stuff. I mean, you learn and you learn how to better serve artists, you know, and you learn what's bullshit and what's not, and you learn that most of it's bullshit. And I mean, that's sort of, God, that's the part that really keeps me up at night. It's just like, how much of this business is total bullshit, and how much disenfranchisement's going on. And
pretty much everything is total bullshit. Movie business,
Manny, I couldn't agree
politics,
with you more.
Religion,
you're speaking my language now, man. If we're not careful, this is going to dovetail into an election conversation. We've got to be very careful.
Unified theory, I think we're developing here.
Amen.
Well, on that note, I think this is a good time to take a little break, huh, man?
Yeah,
I'm
let's
thirsty.
Take a break. The Troubled Nation knows the drill. We'll be right back.
You like me to smile, speak softly and call you baby. Once in a while, just a little crazy, but every time I start to speak my mind, I fade in footsteps leaving me behind. Hard as I try, I can't keep it inside. Shame the devil. Shame the devil. When I was a child, my devils were so hidden. Biding their time, they wait for my inhibitions to fall. And when I start to lose my mind, a voice inside me trains of my spine. Never let go, don't let it show.
And we're back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Mr. Reed Watson. Now, Reed, I know you are a devoted listener to the program, and we do appreciate that. Now, I can't remember ever seeing your name on the Venmo or PayPal link, but, you know, perhaps that will change after having you on here.
Give him a sticker.
And, we have a sticker for
I
you.
I voted
Sorry.
For Manny for mayor. Does
okay.
that count?
Oh, well, that helps. That helps.
Okay, good.
That was more than Manny did for himself in the first few elections, since he was not actually a registered voter.
Yeah, Manny Chevrolet or LaToya Cantrell. I'm a Manny guy.
Yeah. We don't even want to get sidetracked
don't
by
worry.
LaToya.
Don't worry.
Man, oh man, she was in the news again this week.
I wouldn't want to.
But I'm going to lay off here just to let her catch her breath. Because, man.
My vote's very valuable.
She's. Yeah, so the PayPal and Venmo links, yes, we are a listener-supported operation. We have those links right in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook page. And, you know, we do rely on the kindness of our listeners. We also have a Patreon page. Thank you. You know, I get way more stammery when the red light is on
Sorry.
For some reason.
You're like Cindy Brady. game show.
Right.
Remember that episode?
They're all so good.
Yeah.
How do you pick a favorite? But, well, also, you know, something I always mention, the link for the T-shirts.
Oh.
And we had someone purchase a T-shirt today.
Oh.
So I think the way it works, it may be sort of a campaign type deal. So anybody that was on the fence about getting a T-shirt or a tank top, maybe you might want to jump now because it, you know, in the next 2 weeks, I think it might shorten the delivery time. And again, gift giving season will be upon us very quickly.
Gotta get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
No tank top, but a t-shirt.
Sure. I'm a t-shirt guy myself. Yeah. My tank top days are way in the past. My son sports the tank top because he's a 25-year-old strapping young man.
Hey, good for him.
Yeah.
I am not.
Sure, me either.
Do you still do the Speedos, Renee?
Never have been a Speedo guy.
Oh, okay.
No, in fact, I don't even like those boxer briefs that seem to be so popular. I don't like that. It's too tight.
So you just use what? Boxers?
Boxers,
Freedom.
Yeah.
Boxers?
Yeah. And I like the boxers, you know.
Oh, okay.
That's a... anyway, moving on. We don't have anyone to name check this week, so you know we'll go.
Did you ever cash in that loose change?
I did. So it wound up.
So how much money was it?
It wound up being actually in the bag. Surprisingly, was about $36. Now
okay.
I changed it in at CoinStar at Rouse's, our favorite grocery, and they take a 5% or
take a
30%, a 15% bite out of it maybe.
Yeah.
So it wound up netting out like $31. So
where is it?
It covered our drinks last week.
Okay.
Yeah. We put it right into our gullets. Anyway.
Loose change,
yes.
Bars should have the CoinStar machine.
That would be good.
Really should.
You know, who carries around change? You know, in the old days, you used to be able to just go into your bank with your penny bank.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Coin bank. Penny bank? Was that
coin jar.
Yeah.
Piggy bank. Penny bank.
I knew that didn't sound right, but because I remember doing that to buy like an ounce of weed when I was we rode to the Dryad's homestead on the West Bank and brought my neighbor's piggy bank and dumped it in there and we got like $25 and we got an ounce of Colombian gold.
I feel like if my local Marquis Bar in the Bywater, if it had a CoinStar machine, it'd be the most popular CoinStar machine in America.
It becomes a destination. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Okay. I like that. I like. See,
smart.
Reed, you're a businessman. You know, thank you. You're always looking for opportunities.
What about like a recycling center there too? People bring in cans.
No money in recycling.
Man.
That's not fun.
Yeah.
That's no fun. You don't get anything for that, right?
Yeah. Why do you think those guys are walking around collecting cans?
That's a good point. Yeah. In Louisiana, though?
It's a volume game.
You know?
I feel like that's a California thing. I'm not sure it's a Louisiana thing.
Well, yeah, because they just use... it's all broken glass on the streets.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
just throw it in the river.
Throw it in the river. Well, yeah. Just like
deal.
The bodies.
Yeah,
sure.
I bet there's a lot of loose change in the river, too.
I bet there is, man. It's a fast current, though. It's going to be hard to dredge that up. Well, I think that's enough of that for now. If you want to find Iguana's dates coming up, they're in the show notes as well, or, you know, moving on. Back to our guest, Mr. Reed Watson. Now, so Reed, last we left you, you were in Muscle Shoals. Now there's the Florence, Alabama versus Muscle Shoals. So you're actually in Florence, but the whole region is Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, I'm in Florence, but... You say Muscle Shoals because everybody in the world
Nobody's
in music
Florence,
knows what
right,
Muscle Shoals
right, right,
is, or at least they say they do.
Right.
And that's a pretty good door opener, especially in Europe.
Yeah, it has that. It's like, you know, Muscle Shoals has that kind of mystique. Like
that's
New
right.
Orleans has that, I always say, like the Truman Capote, Tennessee
right.
Williams mystique.
Yeah.
Muscle Shoals has that same kind of thing going.
We always say
gay mystique. Is that what you mean?
Well, no, I mean, it's gay in New Orleans. Muscle Shoals, less gay, I think. Yeah. Far less
now,
gay.
Definitely
who
less.
Who opened the first music studio in Muscle Shoals?
So,
because I don't know anything about Muscle Shoals.
Okay, well, that's a complicated question.
Give us
depends,
a thumbnail.
It depends
for
on
Manny
who you
and
ask.
The trouble
but the first studio was upstairs from a drugstore in Florence, Alabama, called Florence, Alabama Musical Enterprises. Florence, Alabama Music Enterprises moved to Muscle Shoals, and obviously that's an acronym for Fame Studios, which Recall opened. And when Fame opened, it was on a dirt road. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe now.
Yeah.
And so then there was...
Why would the musicians who are above a pharmacy want to leave?
You know? Trust me in this. I know.
It seemed to be perfect.
Some of the guys that frequented like, that place, and they did not want to leave.
Go to the Best of Life place here in New Orleans.
Right, right.
Food and drugs.
Restaurant and pharmacy. Well, maybe they'd extended their credit as far as they could go. They needed to change locations, perhaps.
Heard a lot of stories about a lot of pills from a lot of old musicians in the shows,
when they had
man.
The good pills, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
the
man.
The good ups, the good downs, dude. Quaaludes. Oh, yeah.
Holy hell, man. The stories. God, we could do 10 podcasts on this. Just the stories. But, yeah, so... Fame started in Florence, moved to Muscle Shoals, and then, you know, once Arthur Alexander had his big hit out of Fame, then the Muscle Shoals scene was born.
But who opened this first studio?
Rick Hall.
Rick Hall.
Yeah.
Okay. This was back in the 40s?
No, this is late 50s, early 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, and then tons of studios opened up around that. There was Wishbone and Quinvy. Quinvy's an interesting one, because that's where When a Man Loves a Woman was recorded.
Where was When a Man Loves a Pizza recorded?
That was recorded.
I love that song.
Well, you would know.
I don't know. I don't know where it was recorded.
I feel like
I just remember hearing that.
It's a great one. It'll never die.
It's a classic.
Anyway, yeah, yeah, yeah.
From Fame Studios, you know, David Hood and Jimmy and a bunch of the musicians there split off Open Muscle Shoal Sound. And so on to
the
present day.
Continues.
I mean, if you want the full story, watch the movie.
Sure, sure.
It's quite good.
Yeah.
It's called, and see if you can remember this, Muscle Shoals.
Okay.
Very creative name.
Now, where is it?
It's on Netflix.
Okay.
I always joke that they should name the main street in Muscle Shoals Netflix Avenue because of the amount of American tourists that came to the town because of that movie.
All right. Well, shout out to Netflix.
It's huge. I mean, before that, like I worked at the record shop before that movie came out, and it was all like European and Japanese tourists that would come in.
Yeah.
You know?
Because they never forget.
They know it all.
Right.
They love our music way more than we do,
right.
As we all know.
Right.
And
now,
then that movie came out, and then it was just like people down the street were like, oh, I didn't know this existed.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They're all on
news
pills.
To me. They're all on disability.
That's right.
And when did this movie come out?
Came out, let's see, like 2015? 2014?
Oh, God. All
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And it was really good timing because it caught a lot of the older guys before we lost them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of folks in that film that aren't with us anymore. And
that's what we're doing here.
Time.
That's why you're here, Reed. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God.
no, you got a lot more tread on the tires than me and Manny.
Turn 40 next year, guys.
It's all done.
Very, very, very aware of my mortality.
Reed, I'm a friend. It's over. Okay.
Thanks, Manny. If I live to one more mayoral election... I promise you.
If I can live with one more erection,
yeah,
I'll be all right.
Okay. All right.
Keep us updated on
small
that.
Small goals. Yeah, yeah. It's best to have achievable goals.
That's the kind of stuff I listen to the Troubled Men podcast for.
Sure. It's pearls of wisdom, man. You never know
where... Pozole.
Pozole, man. You know...
The Jay Gonzalez episode.
That's you like
classic.
Pozole?
One of my favorites. Yeah.
I love pozole.
Love pozole.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My wife, you know, my birthday's next week, and she's going to probably make me some pozole.
Happy birthday,
nice.
Man.
Yeah,
nice.
I'm going to be 87.
Yeah,
87?
Yeah. He doesn't look a day over 88. Well, getting back to our guest, Reed Watson. So in the narrative here, you've started Single Lock. Single Lock is an ongoing operation.
Started with a lot of friends, not just me, but
who you're no longer friends with. Right?
No. Okay. No, not at all. They're great folks.
Well, good. So you beat the odds, because usually once money becomes involved, especially. Well, here's the interesting thing in the music business. When there's no money involved, everybody gets along fine.
Yep.
And that's why they always say you got to have contracts ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because once the money hits the fan, that's where people are going to get upset.
Yes.
I'm not getting as much as I should. We don't need to get into the
I mean, the funny thing is that we kind of, like, the money we sort of reinvested.
Okay.
Like, we
That's a
put
way
out,
to take the guest to take the animosity out of it. It's like
that,
it all goes
it's also kind of stupid. I mean, like, okay. we put out, I think we're up to 65 records.
Wow.
Now, I mean, we could have just stopped after record three and, you know,
walked away.
Been cool.
Yeah.
But we just were dumb. And we're just like, well, fuck it. Let's just keep doing it.
I like it. It's
kind of punk rock. I like it.
Raises the hair on the back of my neck.
Let's do this shit. Let's go. I mean, yeah. And
but
so
you could have had the money.
We could have had it.
We could have had all that
yeah.
money.
You'll have it again. And again, Reed, they bury us all with no pockets in
That's
this
right.
life. So,
and money is paper, and it's very cyclical, right? I mean, it comes and it goes.
You
and
mean,
it's
fungible. What do you mean they bury with no pockets?
Fungible.
You like that word?
So the suit, it's a fungible token.
So the suit you're buried with has no pockets?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because what good does money do you in the afterlife or in the ground?
So, I mean, literally, though, they
literally,
don't have any pockets.
No pockets, yeah. Because what would they put in it?
Well,
money.
Like the Irish put things. They put like little flask in there and stuff like that. I've been to funerals where they have the open casket.
Okay.
And people put little trinkets in the pockets.
Manny, would you have an open casket at your funeral?
Oh, I'm not having a funeral.
What is that?
I'm going to be cremated.
Oh, I was going to bury at sea?
No,
like
not bury. I don't really care for the ocean anymore.
Okay. Mm.
I like the sand, but I don't like the ocean.
Yeah. I thought you didn't like the sand.
Well, as I grow older, I kind of favor the sand now.
Okay.
Because that's where I can put my cigarette butts.
Sure, sure, sure. It's like a giant ashtray.
So nobody who's buried has pockets.
Well, pockets don't do you any good, is my point.
But I mean, literally, no pockets.
Well,
I mean,
in my tradition, they bury you with no pockets, yes.
Wow.
Because anyway, we're getting hung up in the minutia here. It's more of a figurative expression.
Y'all don't know this, but I'm going for the longest podcast in the history of the Troubled Men.
Well, there is a
Let's say you had a lucky silver dollar or something. You wouldn't want to take that with you.
Maybe I could put it in my mouth or something. You know, so when I'm crossing the River Styx, I can pay.
Styx.
I don't know. Just
where's
just
the River Styx?
I think that it might
be. Is that
be
North Shore?
Yeah, it could be. Somewhere in Washington Parish.
Okay.
Anyway, so so single lock. At one point, you know, you guys have all this money floating around. Do you guys actually have like a venue you're putting on shows?
Yeah.
There?
So we had a spot in Florence because we decided, you know, all these bands want to come see the Shoals. We should have a place for them to play.
And you didn't really have a club that people could play, huh?
No, hell no. You found this out.
Okay. yes, I did.
We're struggling up there, man. But we had a spot, and it was cool. And you know, we found and discovered a lot of people that we'd partner with for a couple of years from that spot. But, you know, like all things, it came and it went.
Right.
And it was
right.
Our offices were in the back of that venue for 3 or 4 years, and it, you know, we've sort of, God, we've done everything at this point. You know, we've run a venue, run a label, managed like all of this stuff, because that's sort of the world we came from. It's like you're in this part of the world. It's like we're DIY. Let's do it.
Have you signed a boy band though yet?
They have a lot of boys. I mean, like the Speckled Bird is kind of a boy band.
Yeah, it's also named after a after Donnie Fritz's favorite amphetamine.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Okay.
Nice.
trivia question. But pills. I love my pills.
It's like Jerry Lee. I remember I was in Memphis one time and I was up there to play a Panther Burns gig or something, driven all night, you know, to get up there, and overnight Jerry Lee had like OD'd or something, or gone into the hospital, and then there was a newspaper article, and Jerry Lee had come out of a coma, and they were talking to one of his henchmen there, you know, Red or Sonny or somebody, you know, and they're like, and they go, oh, Jerry Lee just took too many pills.
Yeah, that's right, too many pills.
Well, so to flash forward, so
sure.
somehow Michael Cerveris meets you, yeah. and my band Loose Cattle is yeah. putting out our greatest and most recent record on your label.
Yeah, so the Americana Fest, for whatever that's worth, I hate that word so much.
There's worse words.
Woof.
Fest.
At least you can fest. Say it on the radio. Yeah.
There's a fest down here for everything.
And we were doing a panel on the 10th anniversary of Single Lock. Okay. Like it was some big fucking
deal.
Now,
what does Single Lock mean?
So we named it Single Lock because the Wilson Dam in Florence, Alabama was the largest, when it was built, was the largest single lock dam on the planet.
I wouldn't have guessed that. I initially thought it was a gun reference, and then I saw your graphic as a key.
Yeah.
What river is it?
On the Tennessee River.
Oh, the Tennessee. Okay.
That dam brought electricity to the Tennessee Valley.
Oh, okay. When was that? Back during the WPA era?
That's exactly
And it
right.
also brought OxyContin, too, right?
That's right. It brought...
lots of OxyContin.
All kind of pills.
Thank God.
All kind of pills.
Coal miners' daughters were Hell being yeah. sold for cotton.
That's right.
OxyContin. Yeah.
That's a new one.
That's right.
We'd love the wordplay here.
But that's why it was called Single Lock.
Okay.
And... yeah. And
so anyway, Michael Cerveris, that's back to how.
Yeah, so I was doing a panel discussion American, on why we yeah. started, and apparently it really impressed him. And he came up and introduced himself, and I was like, oh, you're in New Orleans. Well, I'm in New Orleans. It's great. And we you know, friendly dude. And it was yeah. like, well, send me your record. And it was, y'all made a great record.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Michael is incredible.
The bass
talented.
Playing on it is just next level.
Thank you. Thank you. Well,
really
you know,
great.
I always try to play like I'm playing on a record. It's an approach.
If your rhythm section is Renee and Doug, you're doing pretty good.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good as it gets.
We're you know,
Doug Henning, the magician.
Yeah. 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 He's Doug Garrison.
Okay.
He also has a mustache and beard like Doug. Like,
yeah. But, that's what I said. Yeah.
But no, we're honored to put the record out. It's beautiful. And And yeah, it's just like a natural progression of what we do. It makes sense. It's made for the right reasons. We work with our friends. It's kind of always been our thing.
Well, Michael seemed to be very impressed with your integrity.
Yeah.
The
that's all we got, right?
Well,
especially
not
in
me,
this
not
business.
Me and Manny.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But, well, no, we are who we are. So
maybe I'm naive, but I would trust Manny.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah, me too. Because yeah.
You know, guys are idiots. Fucking idiots. Trust me, man.
Well, I understand. Here's the thing about me. I understand how much I should trust them, or you know,
yeah.
in what way I should trust someone, and then I'm fine because I don't expect more than I can rely
sure.
on. Sure. So yeah, it's all contextual.
Of course. Of course.
You take people at face value until they fuck up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Every dog gets a free bite.
You yes. give them a shot.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. You know.
Well, and one thing I have to say, like your label, all the packages look beautiful.
Thank you.
The printing.
Thank you.
Is great. Now I've made so many or not so, several excellent records where we spent a bunch of money making the record.
Mm-hmm.
Great people on the record.
Mm-hmm.
Spent a bunch of like great people mixing the record. Everything up until the packaging. And they spend about 2 cents on the packaging,
yeah.
and it looks like dog shit.
It's the most important part, you know.
And you look at it, it's like, what is this?
It's
this
the most
is like
important
something
part.
I would throw away.
I mean, and again, that comes from a history of working in record stores.
Yes.
It's like you're flipping through records. What do you want to buy? You eat with your eyes, right? I mean, like, that's the whole point. And so that's a huge part of it. And the cool thing about all that is that it's always from an artist brain. It's like, what do you want? Like, we take the artist, we pair them with a graphic artist, and then we just like get on the phone and work it out.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want? You know, whether we need to hire someone to like paint something, or you know, like the Blind Boys of Alabama record we did the art in Braille.
Wow.
We did like a die cut Braille
wow,
cover,
so
and
cool.
it was the first one they could ever see.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I'll never cool. forget when we brought that record cover to them, and they you know, actually started like engaging with the record.
Right.
We're like, oh, wow. And they'd never been able to do that.
That's so cool.
You know, I mean, like, but like, that's cool. But
did
also
you pay them in change so they could count it, or dollar bills or something like that.
Now,
they haven't recouped yet.
They
Sad.
Haven't recouped
yeah.
yet.
Yeah, well, that braille cut, it's not cheap.
It's very expensive to cut things.
Now, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to do this, but this is actually a true story. I was. This is way before they were on your label.
Yeah.
But I was actually in a hotel lobby with the Blind Boys of Alabama one time. This is years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And one of them could clearly see. I mean, not great.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was thinking maybe it should be like the legally blind.
Four and a half Blind Boys of Alabama.
But then to tag this bit, I thought, well, have you gotten any pressure from any social justice warriors to change it to the visually impaired?
Visually impaired boys of Alabama. The visually impaired men
kind
of the South of Alabama.
Kind of an aggressive term.
You know, I don't think nobody tells them what to do.
They're leaving them. Yeah, yeah, because they go, no, we're the fucking Blind Boys.
They're the fucking Blind Boys of Alabama, man, and they act like it. Like, I love those
Yeah,
dudes.
But how come they all have driver's licenses? That's weird.
Well, just the one. It's a provisional. It's like the...
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't get in a car they were driving.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
I've seen those dudes walk into walls, man. I would not get into a car they were driving.
Yeah, right. But, man, what a great group. What a great...
Beautiful.
So, you don't have a huge roster, but it's an immaculate roster. Yeah.
Thank you.
John Cleary.
Yep. Who I manage now, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting to that.
One of my best buddies, man. I love that dude.
Right. You know, he came on the podcast. This was during the lockdown. He didn't really appreciate our shtick too much.
He didn't get it?
I don't think. I think he's like a little bit impatient, you know. He's kind of a...
John Cleary is impatient? Now that's shocking.
That. He seemed to have a good time.
I don't know about
okay,
that.
All right.
I remember.
All right. Well, no, he wasn't nasty or anything. He's like, you know, you guys.
So he thinks he's better than people?
Maybe.
Is that
well,
it?
Than
what was
us,
he,
maybe.
What was he drinking?
I don't know. This again.
It was remote.
Oh, it was on remote.
Remote. So
oh, that's the problem.
All those were yeah. much less than.
Give him a couple
best.
Pints
yeah,
of Guinness,
yeah,
and he's
yeah,
the best guest
to,
of all time.
You know, I was thinking we have
redo
to
redo that.
We have to get all the people that we
had,
or at least the good ones, back on to do
shows. And, world exclusive, new John Cleary record coming out early next year.
All
we'll
right.
get him on the podcast.
Nice.
Celebrate.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well.
If you insist, maybe not.
Well, you don't like us. I don't like.
No, no, no. I like John. I like John a lot. I'm just saying he thought this is a bit frivolous for. But anyway, moving on. So you have Cedric Burnside. Man,
grandson
I love the Burnsides. We
yes.
love the Burnsides. You actually played on that record.
I did. We cut it at Royal Studios in Memphis with Boo Mitchell. Willie's son.
Nice.
I played Howard Grimes' drum kit.
Cool.
Which was fucking awesome. And Al Jackson's hi-hats.
Nice.
It was just like, with the kit, it was like, just play this. I brought my drums, and they were like, why don't you try these?
Wow.
You know, playing them in the room, and it sounds like absolute
stacks,
like
sound,
wet
man.
Garbage cans. I'm right. just like, really? Then I go in this, you know, the playback, and listen to it. I'm like, oh, it sounds like God is kicking the gates of hell open. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go with that. That'll
you know,
be great.
You know, now that you brought up Al Jackson, you know, the thing that I heard about Al Jackson is like, when they were in stacks and they'd be, you know, Steve Cropper and whoever is working out the tune, practicing, the band's practicing, Duck Dunn is working his part out, that Al Jackson would just be sitting watching them.
I believe it.
He wouldn't be playing along. He's like,
yeah.
And he's like, no, when you push the red button, then I'm going to come play.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would go and do like the two takes, the one take, and put it all out there, and then he'd go, I'm done.
The clock, man. That dude is unbelievable. But no, I did that record with Cedric, and about 3.5 years on the road with him.
Wow.
We went all over the world.
Holy cow.
It was incredible.
And what was the band like? Was it just you and he?
Me and him.
Wow.
Yeah. me on drums, him on guitar.
So
that's all
cool,
he wanted.
Man.
It was really incredible.
I love that hill country shit, man.
Yeah,
especially
like,
no bass.
It's like
that,
some of my favorite music in the world.
Yes,
and
trance music.
You know, it's funny to connect all of this stuff. He played our venue in Florence, and I was talking to him after the show, and he was like, "Man, I said, you got any new music coming out? I'm a fan." And he's like, "Oh, I got this new record, and you know, I sent it to Fat Possum. They wanted me to change all of it, and I didn't want to change it." And I said, "I haven't heard one note of it. I'll put it out."
Yeah.
And he was like, "Okay." And that was Benton County Relic, which got nominated for a Grammy, but didn't win. And then the next one, he had moved on from a drummer at that point. He asked me to jump in and play with him. And I was also managing him at the time, too. So it was just like, you know, I guess it's convenient. And I don't know.
To do everything, wash his socks.
Side note, if you're a musician, just show up on time and be reliable and answer the phone when people call you and you'll get all the gigs. It's that simple.
That's what I try to do.
You don't have to be good.
Well,
just be decent and reliable and you're good. And then we did I Be Trying, the record that won the Grammy.
Right.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It went
what
from
was the
all
category
the
world. The Grammy?
It was the best traditional blues album.
Oh.
Now, there is best traditional blues and best contemporary blues. What separates those? I have no fucking clue. I'm a Grammy board member, and I have no idea the difference between the two of them. But I was very happy that he got in the category he did, and he was honored with the win, which he richly deserved.
He's terrific.
Yeah, it was one of the thrills of my life to play with him.
Man, absolutely.
Really incredible.
Absolutely. What a great tradition that, you know, it's leaking out there, but it's very slowly. It's all this Southern music is so insular, really, you know.
It is.
In many ways.
I think that's cool. Like, you know, not everything has to be, you know.
No, this is the last bastion of regionalism.
Yeah. And I tell artists all the time, it's like, you don't have to be the biggest thing in the world. You really don't. Just, like, find your tribe of people. Who are they? You know, if you find... You know,
like Swifties, right?
Exactly, but exponentially smaller.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole thing. But, like, I mean, you find a couple thousand people that dig what you... You know, this is being
right?
The Iguanas.
Yeah.
You know, seriously, you find a couple thousand people that really dig what you do and will support you, you have a career for the rest of your life. You have to believe that those people are your best publicist, and if they love your music, they tell other people about it, and it goes on from there. I mean, honestly, working with Cedric and seeing how that community supports what he does sort of taught me a lot and informed a lot of what I've tried to do in the business since then, and that is sort of prop up these smaller scenes. You know, it's like we don't have to bow down to the Spotify's and Apples of the world. We really don't. You know, it's like you're a small business if you're in a band.
Right.
And Cedric kind of typified this in a lot of ways. It was like he
very small. Two guys. Well, you take one.
That's it.
One road person, one crew person.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it's just you and you are road managing.
Yeah. I mean, and like, you know, I mean, he can.
So what's you're playing with him and you're managing it.
Yeah, and putting his records out.
All right, so what
is
your
his
cut?
Record label.
I did not take a cut playing.
Okay.
I only took a cut managing, and then the label took our regular cut, but that didn't go into my personal pocket.
And you're selling merch at the same time.
Usually we would tag team that. Because Cedric is the kind of guy that would go back, like all great bands and great musicians, show's over, he goes back to the merch table, meets everybody, signs everything.
He's a people person, he's a friendly guy, yes he's
now,
a good-looking guy.
What kind of merch was the Blind Boys selling? Did they even see their merch?
They didn't see their merch. They don't see anything.
Yeah.
But...
So, I mean, they could have just been selling anything, right? Jock straps.
So many jokes here.
Yeah.
I mean, and the funny thing about them, they're the first people to make those jokes, which I love about
right,
them.
Right, right.
What record is this? I don't even know.
Right.
It's your new record. Okay, great.
Well, just to
lovely people, but
we got off on that tangent. Just sorry. Talking about the immaculate company that Loose Cattle is in.
Yes, thank you.
So
I appreciate you saying that.
We appreciate being in that kind of company. We're honored and
honored to have y'all as well.
So just to recap, Someone's Monster, the new Loose Cattle record, is coming out November 1st. We've already put out 3 video singles in the lead up to this.
Yep.
Further on, Joanne and the Shoals have come out so far. A few more to come out. We're kind of in the waning moments here, but I want to touch on a few others. So you have the Thousand Dances Artist Management. I already mentioned that.
Yep.
And you have, again, you said John Cleary. Now, do you have a Jimbo Mathis connection?
Well, yeah. So Jimbo, I'm sort
former,
of an...
Former...
I'm an advisor.
Guest. Okay.
You know, Jimbo needs no management. Jimbo needs nothing. But Jimbo, from time to time, appreciates an ear in which he can ask questions.
Nice.
And I think Jimbo is a living genius.
Me too.
I really do.
I agree. Jim Dickinson called him the Huck Finn of American music.
Yes, and very right. Well said.
Yes.
I just think I've always been blown away by him, and he's just a really close friend, and... Anytime I can be of service or advice to him, he doesn't really need a manager, but I'm happy for him to put that name on his sheet
if somebody needs
to email somebody a form.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Now, you know, the podcast, we have like concentric circles that the last guest that we had on that's not actually out yet was
right.
Dr. Sick last week, who is the music director for the Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
of course.
Jimbo and Dr. Sick.
That whole scene's amazing. Here.
Yeah, and the Troublemen podcast.
Yeah.
We've insinuated ourselves into this. Anyway, moving on. So you now have a new concern, well-kept secret.
Yeah.
And the well-kept secret, I alluded to it, the thing I said, a music company that resists. Now, you underline resist. So you're trying to key in on the whole resist movement, like resist the man, you know, like resist power.
I don't really know what that means.
Me either. Moving on.
But, you know, like when I moved here,
mm-hmm.
and Manny, I'm going to ask you this because I'm just curious. When did you know you wanted to live here?
I still haven't realized that yet.
Come on.
He still doesn't want to live here.
I still don't want to live here.
Really?
I told you earlier, the only reason why I'm still here is that I married a New Orleans
girl. Okay, that's a boring answer. But
this is one of the worst places ever.
I could not disagree more. I always wanted to be here in some
nice
shape or fashion. Yeah, well, there you go. Can't
well,
please
you know,
them all.
I'm from here, and I always thought, well, I can't wait to grow up and leave. And then I went other places, like on the road, and I realized I was very lucky.
The first time I came here, I just knew. It was like, I'm going to be here at some point.
Okay.
And when you feel called to be somewhere, I mean, like, it's like, how do I fit here? What do I do to help this thing move forward? And like the first thing I noticed coming here was like, well,
you can't do anything to help this place move forward.
That's true.
This place,
bingo.
Exactly.
Well,
you know,
said.
Thank you, Manny.
Anything.
Well said.
Now, Reed. Many people who come from other places. Again, my family's been here since 1798. So we've been here so long, we didn't even know how we got here.
Yeah.
But. I've seen so many people come here with big ideas
from
other places. Do-gooders. Yes, that's exactly
what
I call them.
I'm not a do-gooder.
No. But they always, it grinds them down. You know, and I remember after Katrina, people said, the critics or, you know, reporters would go, are you afraid that all these newcomers will change New Orleans? Like, absolutely not.
No, it won't.
Give it your best shot,
look,
I guarantee.
I survive Muscle Shoals. I can survive anywhere. But
so, Reed, but you're permanently based here now.
Yeah, I'm permanently here.
And you have this. And the other thing I liked about it, as soon as I saw this, it came up on my Instagram. Well-kept secret.
Algorithms work. That's good.
Yeah. And
for once.
I had to laugh. The slogan on your bio is, "We are a music company and we want to help."
Want to help.
And it reminded me what I thought of first. I'm not sure if this was your inspiration. Is the Reagan. thing, which is on one of the
it's decidedly
the debates,
not my inspiration.
He said, you know, there's a terrifying phrase, you know, we're from the government and we're here to help.
Oh. No, that was not an inspiration.
Okay, that's the how my mind
listen,
works.
The inspiration was simply this. Like, when I moved here, I had a lot of musicians that got to know me and started asking me to help.
Okay.
Like, how do we put our record out?
Right.
How do we get our record in?
You
we're a New Orleans
face.
Band.
You seem like an honest guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep telling people that.
Sure.
But, like, you know, it's like, how do we get our record in a shop in Europe? People like New Orleans music there. Like, I heard that Japan likes New Orleans music. How do I get my record there? Okay. How do I get my record on Spotify? How do I get the radio to listen to me? How do I do all this stuff? And it's like, for better or for worse, I think for worse, there's a lot of folks here that would have a lot of advice about how to handle something like that that probably wouldn't be the best.
Right.
But there's a lot of fucking shysters around here that want to, you know,
oh, yeah.
Like,
help, a lot of shucking jobs. Artist. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think that there is a real opportunity for honest music business work that helps music from here get into the greater, you know, into the world at large. And it's not expensive, you know? I mean, like, I generally take 20%. So, and I don't own anything.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I use existing relationships I have, just existing distribution channels, whatever. And I help. I'm kind of the utility knife that helps get all this stuff done for people, get it out. I take a little bit for my time. You get 80% or more or less, whatever,
right.
I mean, of what you make. And you own the record. And hopefully you're in a better space to do that. Like, the majority of my income does not come from Well-Kept Secret. Artist management is a big part of it. I just signed an agreement to open a label for the Alan Lomax estate.
Oh,
we're
going to
reissue a lot of the Lomax archive stuff, like Lead Belly and Jelly Roll and stuff.
Nice.
Like, I have work.
Yeah.
But Well-Kept Secret is a way to... It's like a farm league almost. Like, it's like,
nice.
Let's lift people here. Let's figure out a way to do this in a more moral, excellent, you know, way that puts some money in artists' pockets. And let's build a community here that's honest and trustworthy and see what we can do with it. And it, you know, it doesn't take up a ton of my time, but it's fun. You know, like, I like this work.
You still have the joy.
It's really cool to take, like, a band like The Rumble.
Yeah, yeah.
The Rumble.
Great band.
Great band. You know, it's cool to take a band like that, send them to a buddy in France that runs a magazine. They get a 5-star perfect review on it. Now they're on the radio in France. Their first live record got a Grammy nom.
Right.
This studio album's probably going to get one.
Right.
Maybe it'll win.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably.
I don't know.
Probably will.
Like, there's just... That's real in a world right now where musicians don't have a lot of friends. Nobody really knows how to navigate any of this.
Nobody does.
And there aren't really good answers.
No.
You know? It's like, artists need... They need people they can trust that want to do this for the right reasons. And, like, for me, I love New Orleans music. I love this community. This is a way I can ingratiate myself and be involved in it. And maybe through all of this, we can identify some really great, cool new music that moves the world and keeps this whole story going, which I think is worthwhile and really cool.
Man, that's fantastic. So
that's exciting
sort of
to me. Like,
very
that's,
exciting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, I wrote the first royalty check today that Well-Kept Secret has ever sent out.
Okay.
It was $160.
All right. Congratulations.
But, and what that means is that I think I profited maybe, I don't know, $32 off that.
Right.
Whatever. There was a point in my life where $162 or whatever would have been really cool to get out of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like, if you multiply that times 10, times 20, times 30, you know, then maybe 5 or 10 years down the line, there's an actual There's like a framework to where New Orleans musicians and bands can reliably put their music to market in a trustworthy manner where they own their masters and they're treated with respect. And if that's something I can provide here, fuck yeah, that's great. So we'll see.
Man, oh man. Well, you know,
let's try stuff and see what works.
One of the quotes I had about you with this, well-kept secret is you said, I'm doing this, operating in the music business as a moral exercise.
It is.
I thought that's brilliant. I love that.
It is. I mean, nobody thinks of it. Thank you very much. But nobody thinks of music that way anymore. And thinking about it in that way, it underlines the value and the importance of art in music. And no city has given the world as much as New Orleans has. And like being here and being among it and being a part of it, it's such a thrill. And yeah, it's just like, how can I help? That's what I always say. It's like, how can I help? Somebody comes up to me at Marquee's, like, I heard you're in the music business. I got this record. I need some help. How can I help?
Man,
that's
well,
what it
Reed,
is.
We're so happy to have you here,
yeah, man.
God bless you.
Thank you.
And what a great podcast this has been. Thanks for being a guest.
Thank you.
And as always, Manny, on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But Reed, the struggle continues.
Yeah, man.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. I'm so dead.